suggestions and justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session. Pursuant to adjournment.
Good morning. Be seated, please. The first case in our calendar is 001838, City of Columbus, Division of Income Tax versus New Realty Trust. Mr. Porter.
May it please the Court, Honorable Justices, Chief Justice Moyer, I'm Jeffrey Porter, Assistant City Attorney, here on behalf of Appellant in this matter, City of Columbus, Division of Income Tax. I would request to reserve 5 minutes of my time for rebuttal following Appellee's argument.
Watch your time there, clock.
Thank you. Chief Justice Moyer, Honorable Justices, there are 3 reasons the ruling of the lower court should be reversed in this case. First, the fundamental power of the City of Columbus to lay an income tax and collect it from its citizens will be impaired by a questionable statutory interpretation. Secondly, the dividend distribution made by the appellee in this case does not qualify as an ordinary and necessary expense under the City Code entitled to deduction. And finally, the appellee will obtain a special tax-exempt status in violation of the Ohio Revised Code.
Council, this is a REIT, correct?
That is correct, a real estate.
Can a REIT actually exist and not distribute its in the form of dividends? In other words, definitionally. If it did not do what it did here, could it be a REIT?
On the federal level, it could not. On the federal level, real estate investment trusts are required to distribute at least 95% of its net income to shareholders to qualify for tax-exempt status on an entity level
so
for a real estate investment trust.
So the very nature of its being requires it to do exactly what it did.
On the federal level, Justice Pfeiffer. In that case, on the federal level, on the federal 1120 REIT tax form, it's contemplated that they will go ahead, deduct their ordinary and necessary business expenses to arrive at their net income. And then once the net income is arrived at, the federal government, through its special tax treatment, allows them to distribute that income tax-free to their shareholders. The city code is something...
Well, no, it requires them to do that or there would not be a REIT.
Well, yes, it allows them to distribute up 95% and above to be a REIT on the federal level.
My question is, there was not some special maneuver here by this REIT to avoid your income tax. They did what they're required to do in order to exist in that as the legal entity that they are.
They can exist and pay no federal tax and distribute their income. However, prior to distributing that net income, they have a line that says net taxable income on their tax return on the federal level. This means that other entities such as states, the municipalities, which are not bound by federal tax treatments, we derive our authority from the Constitution and from, you know, the state government, are allowed to tax that net income, which is generated within the borders of the City of Columbus, which in fact this appellant has done so by operating their rental property here within the city. That's why the assessment was made for the roughly $6,000 worth of city income tax. The essential point that we're looking at here is a discussion of 36109 of the Columbus City Code, which defines net profits in the city code. That section states that the net gain from the operation of a business, profession, enterprise, or other activity after provision for all ordinary and necessary expenses, either paid or accrued in accordance with the accounting system used by the taxpayer for federal income tax purposes.
That's the issue, is it not? How is that phrase to be applied in this case? In accordance with accounting method used by taxpayer for federal income tax purposes?
Chief Justice Moyer, I think that this case turns on the interpretation of the section as a whole. I think that a lot of issues have been raised in relation to in accordance with the accounting system used by taxpayer for federal income tax purposes, but that had been previously addressed by the Court of Appeals in the City of Columbus versus White case, which I believe you concurred in that opinion. And in that case, we had a situation in which an individual taxpayer operating a dentistry practice sought to take his corporate ordinary and necessary expense deductions, which he had already used on his corporate income tax return, and transfer those to his individual income tax return based upon that phrase. And the court said in that case that it was unreasonable to believe that the simple use of that phrase would incorporate federal tax rules and regulations into the city code.
These distributions, would you classify them as dividends?
I would classify them as dividends.
Okay, let's stay with the federal level for just a moment. A corporation, and it's a 501, where it distributes its income by way of dividend, takes those as ordinary necessary business expenses, doesn't it?
I do not believe that they do. And in fact, in the case of the REIT, they take ordinary and necessary expenses out to arrive at net income, and then they pay the dividends out. It's a separate process that the federal government allows them to
do. But that part is not taxable until after the dividends are distributed.
On the federal level, they're passed through to shareholders.
Sure, you take your ordinary and necessary expenses out. I realize that. Then mm-hmm. you distribute what's left.
Correct.
As dividends.
Correct.
Of a certain amount. That's not taxable, is it?
On the federal level, it's not because it passes through to the shareholder.
Right. Now, let's just stay there for a minute. Is it taxable to those recipients?
On the federal level, the recipients are taxed upon that income.
Their individual income tax rate.
That's correct.
Okay. Why should it be different on the Columbus Code?
The Columbus Code is different because we do not tax intangible incomes passed to shareholders. In fact, in this case, what we tax at the entity level and on salaries and income derived from earned income. And in this case, we have to tax at the entity level. That is what is being done. That is what is called for in the city code. And in fact, 36109 only prohibits three deductions. One of those being, we do not allow a deduction of income paid to owners of a business. And I believe that the appellees in their brief agreed that there was we do not allow deduction of income paid to shareholders.
Yeah, I understand what your argument is and understand how you construe that under the code, but let's go to the next step now. You have this now in Columbus. We've had the same problem in Toledo. I ran into this problem all the time. And we just didn't have REITs then. We did it a different way, real estate investment holding trust people had. And we always tried to tax that. And the problem is that once you end up having it, the money coming in, if you tax it there, and then you tax it to the recipients too, okay. Isn't that double taxation?
No, we do not tax the recipients on that because that's deemed to be intangible income under the revised code, and we do not tax that. That's the difference.
And that's why maybe the language with regard to, the chief points out, with regard to how you treat it on the federal level is not pertinent here.
I believe that it is.
I'm trying to get you to talk about that because that's the issue.
Yeah, I don't believe it's pertinent here because this is dealing only with a choice of your accounting method that you use to be consistent between your forms and recording your ordinary necessary business expenses.
You would agree if you could tax those distributions to the recipient But that would be double taxation.
That would be correct.
And since you do not, it is not.
It is not. And it's providing for the essential city services that are provided to the Appalachians in operation of their business. In addition to the issue of dealing with 360-109, it's also important to realize that these are not ordinary necessary business expenses as characterized by the Appalachians. These are, in fact, dividends, which are prohibited under 360-109 from their income going to shareholders, who are the owners of the business. Several cases have construed similar situations, those being Bridgman versus the City of Columbus, in which we dealt with a situation in which shareholders owners of a business were in fact making contributions to a retirement plan. Those were found not to be ordinary and necessary business expenses.
Would it not be true that if you cannot tax it at the, for lack of a better word, the corporate level, better term, if you cannot tax it there, then this income would be totally exempt from taxation?
That's correct, Justice Douglas.
It would not be taxed at its source. It would not be taxed upon receipt.
It would not be taxed at its source. It would not be taxed upon receipt, and the individuals would be receiving free city services in contravention of the revised code, which is the last point we sought to make to here today. In conclusion, we would ask that the 10th District Court of Appeals decision be overruled and the decision of the trial court in this matter reinstated, and respectfully request this court to do so. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Porter. Mr. Willey.
Good morning, Justices. Chief Justice Moyer. I think we have to be very careful how we discuss this, and I want to make sure that the court understands that the new plan realty does not make the argument that Columbus is forced to incorporate and follow federal tax laws unless they have an ordinance that says so, which is the case here. New plan does not take the position that the Columbus Code is preempted by the Internal Revenue Code, which I think the city has argued in its brief. But the ordinance itself directs the taxpayer to make deductions in accordance with the accounting system it uses at the federal level. The ordinance itself directs the taxpayer to look to the federal level to determine how to pay its REIT tax.
The city said that just applies to necessary expenses, not to whether distributions of dividends are included.
Well, Your Honor, I think that's kind of a tortured reading of the ordinance. I think what you have to do is understand that we're not dealing with the word method, as we keep hearing from the city's brief. We're dealing with the word system. A method in the tax computation is either an accrual method or a cash method, which is already in the ordinance. Those words are there. The word system means something more than that. And what we're talking about when we talk about the word system, Your Honor, is the system that the taxpayer used when it figures out its taxes to pay at the federal level. You do it the same way. I think that's what the statute says.
Even under the federal level, though, counsel, even when accounting a REIT accounts on its federal income tax return, it has a deduction for its ordinary and necessary expenses to arrive at its federal taxable income, and then there's a provision to deduct the dividends and arrive at a calculation for the REIT taxable income.
Your Honor, I think respectfully that doesn't mean that the dividends paid by the REIT are not ordinary necessary expenses under the federal code.
Well, why would there be? I guess that's the debate. How would you account, poor word, but how would you account for the making that calculation separately from the deduction for dividends? Why would it be a separate step?
I'm not sure why it's a separate step, but I don't think the tax forms ought to be the thing that drives the decision here.
No.
I think what we need to do is read the words of the ordinance, and the ordinance tells us, I think, And New Plan believes that the ordinance tells us that you look at the way you do it at the federal level, mm-hmm. what you take the deductions for, and you do the same thing at the city level. I think one of the problems that we're having here is we either have a clear statute.
It says expenses. It doesn't say deductions. I mean, we should deal with the tax.
Yes.
And maybe that's a significant jump that you might make here in your argument to say the same deductions when, I mean, it doesn't say that. It says accounting system.
Yes. And
but it does tell you to limit yourself to ordinary and necessary business expenses.
And you do it the way you do it at the federal level, which is you're entitled to deduct that. And I think it's an ordinary necessary expense. And I think, Your Honor, the problem is the argument becomes circular at that point. And I don't think you can look. I apologize, Your Honor.
Does the individual shareholder pay tax to the city?
They do not, Your Honor, but we have a solution for the city. Council mentioned in his argument that there are really three things that the city forbids you to deduct in this statute. One is you may not deduct taxes, and it says that expressly. The second thing it says is you may not deduct salary. It doesn't say compensation. It doesn't say income. It says you may not deduct salary at arriving at your net income. They could simply amend the ordinance to say you may not deduct dividends that are driven from a REIT.
So as it stands now, the individual shareholder does not pay taxes.
The individual shareholder who receives the dividend does not pay income tax in the city of Columbus. That's correct. And the city could fix that by adding a third or fourth exemption,
presently,
and we wouldn't even be here.
Presently, they do not pay taxes, do they?
That is correct, Your Honor. They do not.
I recognize that this isn't your major argument, but I'm curious what you think about why they would put in that ordinance that you can't deduct salaries. Because that really does result in double taxation, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
You tax it to the corporation, then you tax it to the recipient.
That's
by
right.
way of salary.
And obviously, Your Honor, the only exception to that would be an S corporation, which
right.
That's exactly right.
Flow through would
right.
be different.
And again, Your Honor, we don't say that the city cannot tax the REIT before it distributes the dividend.
Well, why wouldn't you say that's wrong?
It's wrong because the statute says otherwise. The statute either...
Why would the statute have a right to engage in double taxation? See, if you have an argument that it shouldn't be doing that, and their argument is, or at least the way I've always looked at it is, this money is going to escape taxation totally.
Correct.
And you have to concede that. That's what happened.
As the ordinance is written and as we argue, yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And the other argument is, if you let them tax it at the corporate level, and they could tax dividends as income, then it would be double taxation.
That's true.
You have that double taxation situation in not being able to deduct salaries. Why should that stand? Why should we just say your ordinance is all?
Well, one court has said that the city ordinances are very confusing, and I'm really not clear on your question, but I think the answer to your question is you can tax a C corporation at the corporate level, and then the city may not tax under the code or under the state statutes. It may not tax the dividend when it's received by the individual. But there is no prohibition, and there certainly this happens, is the C corporation is taxed before it distributes its dividends. And there's no prohibition from doing that. They just simply have to say that in the statute. And if they said that in the statute, if they amend the statute and say that, we wouldn't be standing here. We're not challenging, as the city puts it, we're not challenging their right to tax.
To get to where you want to go, as I understand the argument, we have to find that a pass-through deduction of dividends qualifies as an ordinary necessary expense, that language, under your argument, includes distributions of the dividends.
That is correct, Your Honor.
And if we disagree with you, you lose. Correct?
Yes, Your Honor, we do. Thank you. I think we probably then ought to talk about the ordinary and necessary expense then, because that seems to be the pivotal point. It's an ordinary expense because every single year it is distributed by the REIT, and it must be distributed by the REIT in order to continue to have its REIT status. As Justice Douglas pointed out, or I'm sorry, Justice Pfeiffer pointed out, if it stopped distributing the money, it would no longer be a REIT. It has to do it. So it's a necessary expense for the REIT to continue to be a REIT.
When we say, though, to follow that through, when we say it's necessary for it to be a REIT, the whole concept of a REIT is for favorable federal tax treatment. I mean, it's a benefit to the corporation to qualify for status as to be taxed as a REIT.
Yes, it is, Your Honor.
Okay.
Yes, and along the line, the REITs are established. It's not a one-way street. The reason that a REIT is established is for development purposes.
Right. This is ordinary and necessary expenses went to the production of income.
Well, Your Honor, I think that is a definition of ordinary necessary expenses, but I think in this case, especially when you're dealing with a REIT, which is a different corporate entity in and of itself, I think it has a broader definition. And I think in this case, it's an ordinary necessary expense.
The federal law exempts these distributions. We've already agreed to
yes.
that. For taxation. What do they call them on the federal level?
Their dividend.
Call them?
They're dividends, yes.
But not ordinary necessary expenses. Aren't those words of art?
They are words of art, but if you look at the Internal Revenue Code under 162, you don't see a definition for ordinary necessary expenses. You see ordinary necessary expenses are to be deducted, and then there are a variety of case laws and case law and Internal Revenue Code interpretations of what ordinary and necessary expenses are under the Internal Revenue Code. And I think when the REIT was created, this is an ordinary necessary expense for the REIT. It must distribute these funds in order to continue to exist. And I think that's what sets it apart from other corporations and other entities. It's necessary to distribute, or it doesn't exist. Corporations not the same way. It's just a different animal. And I think to the extent that we're talking about ambiguities here and is this ordinary and necessary, I think it's incumbent upon the city to have an ordinance that's clear. And I suggest that I think respectfully to the city a way to do that. And if they do that, all they have to do is amend the statute, and they're entitled to tax us before the REIT before it's distributed. Your Honor, I've lost track of my time.
You have more than 2 minutes because your white light is not on yet, so
I only have I mentioned with Justice Cook that we can't allow this case to be decided on the tax forms, and I think the tax forms may be enlightening, but I don't think that's where this case ought to be decided. I think we ought to read the clear language, the unambiguous language of the statute, and determine that the city has not done its job in order in the way that it now taxes REITs. And I will admit that a REIT is a new animal, and these statutes have been in existence for a long time. The Bridgman case that counsel for the city mentioned was decided in 1980. It's the exact same statute. And I think that it's incumbent upon the city, if it wants to continue to do its taxation, it has to continue to amend its ordinances to meet the realities of the commercial life. And this is one of them. And I don't think they've done that.
Of course, your second argument is that if the statute is ambiguous, then it's construed against the city.
Yes, Your Honor, that's exactly where I was going in my last comment. I don't believe it is, but every time you hear the city argue, I think the more they argue, the more they make it ambiguous. And Justice Douglas, you're absolutely right. If it is ambiguous, it has to be construed against the city. It has to be strictly construed against the city. We would ask that you follow the 10th District's decision, that you sustain that decision, and that you hold that the city ordinance cannot tax this REIT in the manner that it has.
You know, are there a lot of these REITs? We're talking about $6,000 worth of tax here, but is this just scratching the surface? Is this a major problem?
Your Honor, there is a case pending with our client in Cincinnati. Similar issue, similar statute. As you read the briefs, you will see that other ordinances throughout the state have used language that's similar. I think there's a St. Mary's case that has similar language. But I think it would be a mistake to simply say, gee, this is terrible that the REITs get away with this, because the REITs are a creature that has enormous economic benefit. And there's nothing in the record that talks about that benefit, and there's really nothing in the record that talks about all these other statutes. So if we're going to say, gee, this is going to create chaos...
What economic benefit would they have to providing police and fire protection that the city has to provide to your corporation?
Your Honor, what happens with a REIT is a REIT develops in a city. It builds apartments, it builds office buildings, it generates tax bases for the real estate taxes.
Go to builders, and they all pay tax.
That's true. But again, Your Honor, the federal government has carved out an exemption for REITs for a variety of policy reasons. One of them is they provide an enormous economic benefit. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Welly. Mr. Porter, you stayed at 4.5 minutes of your time.
What it boils down to is whether it's an ordinary and necessary business expense. And we've heard some pretty interesting verbal contortions here today. And quite honestly, when you're dealing with necessary, it's not whether it's necessary to the survival of the REIT on the federal level. It's whether it's necessary to the generation of income as when it qualifies as an ordinary and necessary business expense.
Aren't salaries, fringe benefits, pay to employees of a corporation ordinary necessary business expenses?
That is correct, Justice Douglas. And if 361
prohibit those from being
36109 only prohibits salaries paid to owners, not salaries paid to employees, not benefits paid to employees.
Sometimes owners are also employees.
That's correct, but they're owners of the business nonetheless, and they receive that benefit.
When Congo says your ordinances are all out of whack and they need to be looked at and changed?
No, they're not out of whack. They've stood the test of time.
Where do you get that from now?
Where does he get that from? He's getting that from the fact that the federal government chooses to recognize, based on different priorities, different taxing schemes for federal tax purposes. They're free to do that because they're dealing with a separate body of law. We derive our authority from the state. We, like many other municipalities, have based our income tax code primarily on the 1938 code in Philadelphia, which takes the general propositions of income, expenses, ordinary and necessary business expenses, applies them evenly to all taxpayers, essentially coming up with what we're almost dealing with is a flat tax of 2% on income, and applies it evenly to all taxpayers. The problems we run into are few, but they essentially come from the fact when the federal government chooses for whatever priorities on the government level, on the federal government level, to recognize new exemptions. I think one case that really talks about this and where you run into problems when you essentially tie your local income tax code to federal law is Robinson versus the City of Indian Hills. And in that case, the municipality sought to tie their income level to a specific federal income level, and that income level, that net income level, kept changing. And the court said that it was imperative, and it was the legislative body of that municipality, it was imperative upon them to judge what was right for the municipality and not to tie their taxing power to the federal government. This case essentially turns on what constitutes an ordinary and necessary business expense. We believe that the city has presented sufficient evidence and through case law, municipal case law, that shows that the dividend distribution the appellees seek to make to their shareholders should not qualify as an ordinary and necessary
expense. Court of Appeals make a factual error, or is this a legal error?
The Court of Appeals made a legal error, and I believe the Court of Appeals previously had this correct in the White case. They interpreted it correctly in that case, and for whatever reason, they chose a different interpretation of the law.
They cite us to that. They discuss why it happened. But here they say, as a matter of law, the dividends that appellant paid to its shareholders are not taxable income under the Combs ordinance because that says net profits from the operation of a business are not taxable.
The dividends themselves are net profits. They are the net profits. They're called dividends after they're given away. And in this case, we have the ability to tax net profits less ordinary and necessary business expenses. The appellees seek constantly to characterize their dividends as ordinary and necessary business expenses. For whatever reason, the 10th District decided that they thought that that was correct. And in other cases, including the White case, construing the same section of statute, they correctly interpreted that that federal tax law doesn't really apply to the city. So, Justice Douglas, we would submit that this does not qualify as being appropriate a deduction of ordinary and necessary expenses under the code. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Porter. The case is submitted. You will be advised of our opinion.